Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Brian Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Kansas City. Padres, Royals, three games. One of the best road teams against a team that has won seven home games in a row. Went 6-0 on their last homestand, the Royals did. Ryan, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with pitching. Kevin, the roller coaster season continues. Last time we talked, which was two series ago, they were about ready to play the Yankees. We were talking about how stellar the Padres starting pitching had been. Yu Darvish goes out and gets shelled by the Yankees and then struggles again. And now, you know, there's talk about hamstring issue, correct?
Hamstring
tightness. And the starting pitching is now a question mark again. This team has been so consistently inconsistent. I'm sure next time we talk, we'll talk about the starting pitching being good again. What do we make of the Yu Darvish injury? And is this cause to be concerned? This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com.
Yeah, I would think. And look, I don't know. I have not received texts back, and my phone can still not call anyone. There is a Verizon outage in Kansas City. So even if I cared to really press this issue with people, I wouldn't be able to right now. No idea. Anyway, I feel like I'm back in the 70s. Is that how long ago since we – it feels like my entire life since I didn't have cellular phone. Anyway, regardless, I'm thinking – hamstring, 37 years old, had to leave a start, even though they've downplayed it. So if I walk in today or we're in Anaheim watching Yu Darvish pitch on his next turn, I can't say I'm surprised, but yeah, I would be because I think you kind of take – you're careful with this. So we'll find out later today. Regardless, yeah. I know that Mike Schilt would take issue with the roller coaster, but maybe not with the starting pitching because that is exactly what it's been.
Right.
And right now we're talking about Dylan Cease has gone three starts without a quality start since that incredible start in Chicago. Now, I think he went 6 2/3 last game, four runs. And so, you know, sometimes you take that from your workhorse. The team has lost two of his last three starts. Joe Musgrove tonight will make his – or tomorrow night. I guess it's actually not night. These are really interesting start times.
Yeah.
I think it's 7:10, 3:10, 1:10 Central Time. Mm-hmm. You guys figure that out for yourselves specific. But Joe will make his third start coming off the IL. They've been good starts for coming off the IL, but looking to see that next step, maybe a quality start out of him. You know, the guy you're like, all right, Michael King, right? You're either going to get excellence or, I mean, it's not going to be so good. And you know what? As your number four starter, like Michael King is fine, man. Their 4 and 5 starters are pitching how you would, like you can't have zero complaints about how their 4 and 5 starters are going. But this is something they're counting on, man. And there are times where it's like, wow, yes, exactly why these guys are making what they're making and why the team was to some extent built around them. And then other times, wow. I don't mean to get ahead of myself, but like this is one of those proverbial rotations where it was three guys built to help you through a playoff series.
Right.
Like they've been good enough to get this team to the playoffs, right? I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway. That's where we're at.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that we talked about this last year a little bit, and maybe not so much this year, when your margin is so thin, right? The way they're playing, right? This is not a team that's blowing people out. This the Padres big three is now a big two, and big two is not hitting or not hitting like they should be. You need the starting, right? You can't be relying on your bullpen. And we'll talk about the bullpen here in a minute. You can't be relying on your bullpen every night to win games. You really need that starting pitching if you're going to play 4 to 3 baseball games every night, you know, 3 to 2 baseball games. If it's going to be tight, you really need your starting pitching to deliver. And it has delivered this year in big time, just not consistently. And I think that to me, maybe it's not a red flag, but it's like a pink and slowly turning red flag here as we enter the month of June.
Yes. It's a caution flag. Sure. Absolutely. The big three, I'm going to have something I'll post later today. It might be one of those things, or it is one of those things that certain people are going to go, well, duh. Yeah, we already knew that. No, like how amazingly they're underperforming. Fernando Tatis Jr., Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado, obviously Xander Bogaerts on the injured list for another couple months probably. But still, it's only been a week, so we can count him in there. It's incredible. If you compare it to the other teams in the league that are built around a big three, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Yankees. I mean, it's mind-boggling. You just made me think of that while we while you mentioned, yes, why the margin is so low, slim. So good thing their bullpen's doing well.
Right. Well, and it's a good thing, you know, they've talked all year about winning on the margins, right? There, you had a great note in your Padres Daily the other day. They're playing well in one-run games. They're playing well in extra inning games. They haven't played a ton of extra inning games, but they're doing okay there. After last year's historically bad struggles in close games, it appears as if they're playing better in them.
Right. They're doing well in that. They're coming back as much as any team, but you can't. These are all things that can also depend on luck to a certain extent.
Yep.
And so back to taking to the starting pitching for one more thing is like the starting pitching has buried them. And so like they're good at coming back, but even the best teams in the league at coming back only do it occasionally, right? Right. From down two or three runs. Every team's record is better when they score first.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Mike Schilt post game. Following, you know, the Padres take 2-3 from the Marlins. They lose Wednesday. Yu Darvish is chased early from that game. I think, Kevin, it's maybe the worst game they've played all year. Struggled in the field, at the plate, the whole nine yards. And afterwards, somebody sort of talked about the up and down nature of the season. And Mike Schilt kind of barked back a little bit that, you know, that he would take it, you know, hey, they just won a series. He's not going to complain after they won a series. But even he has to know baseball teams need to get hot for extended periods of time. You're going to go face the Kansas City Royals and the Anaheim Angels or Los Angeles Angels. This would have been a really good time to sweep the Marlins. It could have maybe really rocketed you through a week worth of games against bad teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Royals are not bad, but the
winnable games. How about winnable games, Kevin?
There you go. Your point is well taken. Yes, and it's hard to sweep a major league team. And I will say this, and this is not anything against the question he was asked. I don't think that it necessarily merited the response that it got. But I will say this about the point that Mike Schilt was making. He, at least on this one, he was right. Like after what was it, a 14-18 start? I think they're 16-11. They're 5-over. That gets you to 90 wins if they keep playing at this pace. Now, my point back would be that, okay, but you got to win, as you just said. You have to go on streaks. I mean, that's basically, it is rare a team that gets through and makes it to the playoffs, gets to, you know, the required 87, 90, 90 plus wins without a 6-game, 8-game, 10-game winning streak that helps you. Look at the Dodgers. They've had some clunker weeks, but that's because then like they just came out of what, losing 4 or 5 in a row. And now they've won 3 in a row.
Right.
They had a bad stretch there a couple weeks in, and then they come out and they have this incredible stretch, like 10 of 11 or something. That's how you build those records. It is not, yes, theoretically, if you remember, Bob Melvin was saying that all the time last year. Win 2 of 3, win series, you're going to make the playoffs. Well, but you're not going to win every series, which is why you need a 7-game win streak.
Right. And a 10-game, you know, let's say a 10-game win streak, it almost inoculates you against the inevitable slump, right? You know, you can then play a bad month and not lose a ton of ground.
I will say this. I was talking to Manny and I didn't put this in. But it was very clear what he was saying. He goes, we've had a team that's gone on 10-game win streaks. And he kind of smiled like 2021 team was freaking unbelievable in May and June. There was a 10-game win streak. I think like another 8-game win streak. And what happened in 21? But that was an historic, the fourth worst 42-game finish in the history of baseball. That was historic. Generally speaking, Ryan, you are spot on. Like that can help you. It's like a, not to get political here, but it's a vaccine.
Right. Right. And then, yeah, because here's the thing. Slumps are inevitable, right? They're going to lose 5 or 6 in a row at some point this season, right? The more you can sort of stack wins against winnable series, let's say, against teams that can be beaten, and the Kansas City Royals are one of those teams, the better off it is long-term for you. I'd like to talk for a minute about the bullpen. I know that this isn't your story, but it ran in today's UT. Jeff Sanders did a really nice job talking about before Wednesday, the Padres over 12 games had the best bullpen in baseball. And that has sort of coincided with Jeremiah Estrada's rise from El Paso, Texas, to eighth inning guy on a team that thinks it's a playoff team. Yep. Talk about him a little. I know that you saw him early in training camp. Is he the guy who you see the stuff and you go, oh my gosh, he could be a contributor, or is this a surprise?
Yeah, a few weeks into the Cactus League, I guess it was maybe a weekend or like three or four of his appearances that you said, oh, wow. Like, especially Korea with the expanded roster, this guy is going to make the team. And then he gets sent down after Korea and he doesn't come up till April 26th. And the stuff is still there, but, you know, he was working low leverage. They move him into a high leverage situation. It appeared that was what was going to happen. He didn't do great, but they knew and they kept him there. And now you are correct. That 12-game stretch actually perfectly coincided with that night, the 17th of May in Atlanta, where he came in and saved the game after Robert Suarez faced the, you know, what Mike Schilt will call his lane, both handedness and like the center of the heart of the order. And then they gave the bottom of the order to Jeremiah Estrada. And then what? And then three straight appearances. And then there was like a hold, right, where that would have been Wandy Peralta's role, and Jeremiah Estrada took it. And then he got the win in a game by pitching, I think, two scoreless, perfect innings. And then they won, and then they scored the go-ahead run the next inning. He's out in his 13 strikeout streak right now, the longest that we know of, because it was like reliable statistics, play-by-play, only go back to the expansion era of 1961. So that's what we say, that since 1961, no pitcher's ever struck out 13 in a row. Not only that, this might be more like impressive to me. It's 18 of 21 that he struck out. Like, and all 13 of those were swinging, and I think all but one of the 18 were swinging. I think I talked about it here. I don't know. I talk so many places. Fastball's always been there. Developed a splitter. By the way, the Cubs, the team that put him on waivers, helped him. Their pitching coordinator, Jeremiah Estrada came up with it himself.
Right.
But then their pitching coordinator, which I remembered his name, they worked on it last year when Jeremiah was in Arizona. And then he's obviously refined it. And, you know, as soon as Ruben Niebla saw it, he goes, that's your secondary pitch. That's number one above the slider. And so he is at this point unhittable. You watch him and you go, he might always be unhittable. There's going to come a time where he's got a tired arm. The stuff isn't there. But, man, it has – as read Jeff's story, it has – they were talking about this, and I probably should have made a bigger deal of it at the time. Mm-hmm. This is almost an all-new bullpen. If you talk about roles, it's an entirely new bullpen. Robert Suarez is the closer. He wasn't the closer last year. Adrian Morahone was here, but he was hurt and up and down. And, you know, he's getting into higher leverage situations. Every other guy is new to this team. They talked about it the first month and a half. We're figuring these guys out. They're figuring themselves out. The catchers are figuring the pitchers. The pitchers are figuring the catchers. The coaches are figuring a new manager, figuring out. And now they've settled into roles.
The only guy who started the 2024 season in the same role he had a year ago was Tom Cosgrove. And Tom Cosgrove's at AAA.
Yep.
And struggling. Struggling. But again, that's the nature of relievers, right? I mean, relievers are up one year, down the next. We can talk, you know, I can name drop good Padre relievers of yore who were just kind of one-year guys. Kevin Cameron, Clay Meredith. I mean, we can go down this line. This is the nature of relievers, but it seems almost more so this year with the Padres, where they're getting really good production out of some guys who, quite frankly, probably weren't part of the plan in February and March.
Right. And we thought that their bullpen was going to be a strength, but we thought more so like because their starting pitching wasn't going to be. So now they made it a strength and they theoretically strengthened their starting pitching since the offseason. And this should be good. Should be good.
We thought Woosuck Go was going to be a big part of their bullpen. And he may be looking for a third major league team as we go forward here. Let's talk about Manny Machado a little bit. Man, he kind of got Wednesday's game. And again, Kevin, I'm watching on TV. You were there. Wednesday's game, there were a couple very non-Manny Machado-like plays that he made in the field. And then he makes what I think is the best throw I've seen him make all year, falling down the third baseline, throwing sort of back over his shoulder. This has not been a good year for him so far. And I know that he's sort of doing this, right? If you're watching on TV, I'm kind of doing the up and down thing, but where is he right now? And where's his headspace as he heads into Kansas City?
As Manny seems to be actually in a good spot. Now,
okay.
Talk to people that he does wear this, right? Like this does weigh on him. He knows how important he is, right? And generally that means that he's important because he's doing well and that's helping the team. And right now he's basically an albatross. He is. I mean, that's incredible to say. And it's hard to fathom it would continue to go forward. Mm-hmm. If you look at the last 2 years, there's not a lot to give you a lot of faith that he's going to go on one of those crazy previously Manny type tears, but that's what he's done his whole career. He is on a 7-game hitting streak, but he's only hitting .310 during that time. Now that's great. Mm-hmm. Take that the rest of the year and he gets up to .270. But again, you don't do that. Generally, especially Manny has a month or more where it's incredible and then a month or more where it's mediocre. Well, he's going to need a couple months of incredible to get it up here. So get the numbers up here. Yeah. I have not got any definitive information that the injury, I mean, he wouldn't be playing third base if that elbow weren't getting better. All right. Right. He's gotten into some bad habits. He's in a funk where the fact is he's just not, both he and Tatis, just not hitting pitches they should, that they should do damage on.
Right. Well, as we would have all predicted before the year, Kevin, thank God for Donovan Solano. Who would have thought we would be uttering that phrase on this podcast? This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com. We've been meaning to talk about him for the last 3 or 4 episodes and things have kind of gotten away from us. But man, I know he just got here, right? He's been with the club for a month, a little less. He arrived right after the trade of Luis Arraez. Those two guys have been as responsible as anybody for their success here in the last couple of weeks. What does he add to this team at this point? And what do you make of him having watched him now for almost a full month?
Yeah, not to channel Mike Schilt, but a solid at bat, just a pro at bat, right? And that's what it is. Look, he had a very important home run the other night. And I think it was a 3-1 victory. So his solo home run had put them up at the start. But that's not something you count on. But singles, for sure. Doubles, walks. I mean, he's getting on. It's kind of amazing that this guy, it's not quite Luis Arraez, though Schilt compared him, but it is sort of the same thing, right? Like he is up there to exploit what the alignment is of the defense. He's up there to just do what he can with a certain pitch. So you cannot count on, you cannot build your team around him, but what an incredible pickup. And I hate it that every time we talk about something good, I go, because this is about this team winning. This is about this team going to the playoffs and challenging for a championship. It's like, this is exactly the guy that you need to do that. Him, Profar, until recently, a little bit of a slump, Cronenworth. You've got this other group. Mm-hmm. Man, the core needs to do better.
And if the core does better, and if these guys will sort of inevitably regress a little, but if they can continue contributing, you've got the makings of a winner, I think. To go to a World Series, I think you need 5-6 guys on a 25-man team to have the year of their friggin' life, right? I mean, you need career seasons from guys.
Unless your biggest guys, like the Yankees could do this, but they've got their worst of their big three has a 800 OPS.
Right.
Giancarlo Stanton. Judge is over 1,000. I think Soto's at 999. They have more homers than the rest of their team. Every other player on their team combined, they have more homers than 4 teams, those three guys, unless you're that.
Right.
And maybe the Dodgers with Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman. But these are almost historical threesomes, right?
Right.
So yes, you a team does need that. Because I would say that even if you asked me who the best big threes are, because that seems to be a trend among these good teams, right? I'd put the Padres at the second best or third best if I weren't looking at the numbers, if I were going on names. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to beat Freeman, Betts, Ohtani, okay? Yeah. But so yes, the Padres, I would say they need a couple other, like a Jurickson Profar, a Jake Cronenworth to really supplement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that is the thing that frustrates me watching them. And again, they're in a much better place now than they were the last time we talked and the time before that. Like, they continue to sort of slowly inch their way up in much the way I think we had been saying Mike Schilt teams typically play, right? The thing that frustrates me watching them on TV is you're getting a career year from Jurickson Profar. Jurickson Profar could be an all-star this year. In fact, he should be an all-star.
Yeah, right, unless now there's some incredible drop-off, he should be, and it would be the greatest thing. I really, really, really would be happy for, because I like stories, right? Like, I like stories, both for me, but for guys, for people. And the All-Star game's in Texas.
Right.
What if I was the number one prospect and was the, you know, what a story.
What if I told you in February that they would trade for Dylan Cease, trade for Luis Arraez, be getting career years out of Jurickson Profar, that Jackson Merrill would be good slash very good in center field, that you'd go get a guy in Donovan Solano who'd spark you, that Robert Suarez would be unhittable as a closer, that you would find an eighth inning guy. If I told you all these things, you'd say, so what, they're 15 games over?
Best team in baseball. And the best team in baseball, probably. Like, you know, unless you go underlying and you look at the number of times their starters have kind of put them behind 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, blah, blah, blah. If you just said that, if you just took, I'm telling you, the numbers that I've been working on here over the last day in terms of the lineup, they have a very good supporting cast.
Yeah.
Yep. Arguably the best around a big three, but the most disappointing by a long shot, the most underperforming big three that they're among the five teams that have a big three. Sure. And yes, they could, if their guys were even slightly better, they're the Bogarts, Machado, Tatis, slightly better, the 15 over, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a little three, Arraez, Solano, Cronenworth, something. Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, can we talk about the Royals here? This is a team, I'm guessing your average San Diego Padre fan only knows a couple things about them. And that's number one, that it's a team that's littered with former Padres. Right? Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Hunter Renfroe, and Adam Frazier are all Kansas City Royals. This is a team that sort of does this thing where, you know, they tank and then they spend and then they tank and then they spend. And they're sort of in that spending thing right now. They were big spenders this offseason, right?
Relatively speaking, absolutely.
For them.
The last time when they went to the World Series, had their run of 2+ years, it was a lot of homegrown talent, and they with some free agents for sure. But they went and did some spending, and the kind of spending where you're like, really? Will that work out? Like, and you know what? It has. Padres face, they don't get Lugo, who's doing phenomenal. The Padres made a choice on Lugo and Michael Wacha that, hey, we got what we could get, and now they're going to get this certain amount of money, and we're just not sure that that's going well. Maybe they're going to be right about Michael Wacha, because he's probably at some point the shoulder's going to get to him. I think he's got 3-4 quality starts in a row right now after a rough start. But Lugo looks like one where it's like, you know, probably worth the 16 mil. Probably worth it.
And again, these are guys who, I mean, Wacha's sitting at, you know, 4-5 with a 4.3 ERA. Serviceable, better lately than he was to start the season. He will pitch tonight against Dylan Cease. And then Saturday, you've got Joe Musgrove versus Alec Marsh, who's been really good. 3.2 ERA, second-year guy, off to a really strong start. And then Sunday, you've got Michael King versus Cole Reagans, a guy who, frankly, Kevin, I don't know a lot about. But since he's left-handed, he's probably going to be Cy friggin' Young against the Padres because they can't hit lefty.
Been doing much, much better against lefties. you are correct. Their numbers are down, but they're rising. And I will say this. One thing we should probably look at, they ain't hitting righties very good either. Now, what's weird is that a lot of their guys who crush lefties have not been doing so, but they have been better lately.
Right.
And when I say lately, I mean like a week and a half.
Yeah.
Except for the occasional, you know, I mean, Chris Sale shoved on him. Was it Abbott that shoved on him? And obviously Carlos Rodon did. And the kid, you know what? Braxton Garrett for 5 innings did pretty well on Wednesday. So you are correct. I do want to say, like, we have really run with this, and it's a small sample size, and they are doing better lately. And I always love the stats where it's like, you know, they don't do well against runners in scoring position. Well, that's true. They also suck with nobody on. That was an example. The Padres are actually better in both hitting overall and with runners in scoring position. But it's like, yeah, okay, guess what? Break down the numbers. They're not doing great against righties.
Right.
They're actually doing better. Almost every player in their lineup is doing better against lefties than righties recently.
Okay. This is a great stat from Jeff Sanders here. Five of the Padres' eight regulars have an OPS under 720 in the month of May. And we're just, it says 31st. So they're going to finish a month with five regulars or being average / below average. And they've had a good month. I mean, as a team, it's been a pretty good month for them.
You have four more months like this and you're in the playoffs. I will basically guarantee you, unless we have some sort of historic surge by a bunch of teams.
Right, right, right. Anybody on the Royals you're excited to see? This isn't a team we talk about a lot.
Bobby Witt Jr., Sal Perez, 34 years old, batting like 320. Hold on a sec. I don't want to get this wrong. This is one. Well, I can't remember how many home runs, but he's got a 912 OPS, it must be a lot.
10 homers.
34 years old. He's still their primary catcher. It's just unbelievable. Just what a – wow. The only guy left from their run, right?
Mm-hmm.
Love it. But Bobby Witt Jr., now one of the highest paid players. So that's a real investment by them, an investment by a player that they drafted, developed, and that came up young. And he's their Fernando Tatis Jr., okay? Yeah. Having a heck of a year here. So batting 309, I think he has a 911 OPS. So, and then I'm excited to see Hunter Renfro. Always enjoyed him. Have loved the fact. What an incredible career that he has put together in terms of, like, you want to talk about journeyman. He's been on a different team every year. He was on two different teams last year. He was a part of that salary dump, that waiver wire salary dump by the Angels last year.
Yep.
So I don't know if I've lost track. Is it five teams in the 4 years since he was traded to the Rays? And he was one of the guys. He was one of the guys. Like, remember, home runs to the top of the Western Meadow Building, part of that AAA championship is going to be the future. Now, I think if you knew, you talked to people, you knew that the Padres were not going to keep Hunter Renfro forever. But from the outside and for a little while, it was like, this is a part of the core. Again, I like good stories, and I like that Hunter Renfro has made himself a career by being a guy who, he's not doing so great this year. He's batting 169. I think he has four homers, but has been a guy who's been able to what? I don't know if you're looking at the numbers, but average 25 homers, 30 homer, yep.
By the way, this is his sixth team since he was a Padre. He was a Ray, a Red Sox, a Brewer, an Angel, a Red, and now a Royal. And again, he's not a bad player. Last year, 19 homers. 20 home runs the year before that, 29 and 31 the 2 years before that. And again, he is who he is. Man, and I'm trying to think of a good comp here.
Yeah.
It's almost like a journeyman pitcher in that you know exactly what you're getting from him. He strikes out a ton, strikes out twice as much as he walks, and that's in a good year, right? Not going to hit for average, plays a good outfield, has a strong arm, is a league average, slightly above league average outfielder. And guess what? You can make a lot of money being a league average outfielder on one-year contracts. He's making $13 million this year from the Royals. Is a guy who, could play forever. By the way, you want to feel old? He's 32. Hunter Renfro, the future of the Padres, is 32.
You're at that age where things like that can make you feel old. I just feel old all the time.
Man, I remember watching him in college and being like, well, maybe in 2019 he'll come up, and thinking 2019 was a long ways away. And now we're here in 2025.
It's 2024, but yeah, you're getting old.
It is 2024. Thank you.
That was amazing. Oh, you're really ahead. I'd love to know what's going on in that brain of yours. Wow.
Unfortunately, not a whole lot, I don't think. Padres Royals 3-game series, playing for the fictional Eric Hosmer Cup, probably.
which was just made up. That's fantastic.
Yeah, the Mark Davis Trophy. We can do this all day. Remember Mark Davis? Won a Cy Young.
No.
Went and signed with the Royals.
Forgotten Cy Young, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, the guy won the Cy Young, for goodness sake.
I know. This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com. Before we go, I always put you on the spot. We are both admirers of the city of Kansas City.
Indeed.
And it's not a place I think your average person would circle and say, let's go vacation in Kansas City, Missouri. But I've never had a bad time there. Give me a Kansas City story. And by the way, you've been going there since what? Chargers, Chiefs, right?
I've been going here since I covered the Angels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always enjoyed it then. And I will say this, here's my favorite thing, and it's boring, but I'm sorry. My life revolves around my work here, or my travel revolves around my work. My wife and I both travel an immense amount. We do not leave the Southern California area when we are at home. So sorry, that's just how it is for me. The airport here, I got off yesterday. It's an entirely new airport. I knew it was coming, but I didn't realize it was done. The old one is being raised right now. It's right next to it. And it's just like every other airport, and it's modern, and it's like there's concourses. It used to be, if you were staying at the airport Marriott and you got upgraded so you could get off the plane, I have done it before. Door open, sitting in hotel room, 10 minutes. Think about that. If you've ever been in an airport, impossible to do. Loved this airport. Now it's fine. It's just like every other airport. And so good for the good folks of Kansas City. But I did talk to my Uber driver, by the way. He said that locals feel the same way I do. They loved the old airport because of how easy it was. But anyone coming here, there was no food. There was nothing. It was bad. It's basically Terminal 1 in San Diego, which is basically like Papua New Guinea. That's what the Terminal 1 in San Diego is. Anyway, great Italian food here. I'm telling you, I've had two of the best Italian food, Italian dining experiences of my life. And then, of course, the barbecue. You absolutely cannot go wrong. Maybe what people don't understand is, what is the name of the place? But it's basically in a gas station.
Oh,
and it's the best barbecue that you will ever have. It's not Gates. That's the one that's almost like a fast food one. But anyway.
Just not Arthur Bryant's, not Oklahoma Joe's.
Oklahoma Joe's is more like a nice one. But anyway, you cannot just walk in anywhere and get it. You probably get it at a vending machine to be good barbecue. I love the two. I love Arrowhead and I love Kauffman Stadium. I don't like that they are in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
You know, but they're fantastic. I'm sorry, Kansas City. I'm glad that your stadium vote failed by 18%. And, you know, is going to have a real uphill climb because I love Kauffman. And since now we come here every other year, you know, I can look forward to it. I hope one day you get the joy and the benefit of a downtown ballpark because obviously we in San Diego understand the benefits of that. And Kansas City downtown is nice and nice ballpark and all that. But man, Kauffman, I love it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Kansas City, far superior to St. Louis.
And why is it that you like it?
It's silly. So we've got a little time. I can do this. I have a twin brother, Kevin. You know that. He covers the Bears now for the Chicago Sun-Times, Patrick. He went to Missouri for college.
Yes, yes.
I would go visit him, and Columbia, Missouri is about equidistant from Kansas City and St. Louis. And so you could essentially just pick one. And so, you know, one time I'd fly in, I'd go to Kansas City. Another time I'd go into St. Louis and just really like Kansas City. Ended up going there for a couple of NCAA tournaments. Back at their arena, back when it was called, I think, the MCI Center or something like that. Had a blast there. Love the Negro League Museum and Hall of Fame. Love Arthur Bryant's barbecue. I'm sure that there's better barbecue than Arthur Bryant's, but I like Arthur Bryant. To the point where I used to have the sauces mailed to my house. And it's just, it's one of those places. It's like Salt Lake City, Utah, Kevin. I never heard anybody say a nice thing about Salt Lake City, Utah. And you go and you walk around and you go, it's clean. It's nice. The people are great. The food is great. Why aren't people talking about it? And I think Kansas City, Missouri is a little bit of a hidden gem.
I absolutely agree. And Salt Lake City, not that, you know, it's all, I agree with you on Salt Lake. Now, if you were looking for a beer, you had to buy a membership to get, you know, go in the basement somewhere, then I can understand maybe you aren't happy with it. It is diversified greatly. And I think it's very close to Park City. Love me some Salt Lake.
Yeah. It's so funny. We talk all the time about, you know, 6 or 10 big cities in America. And then you go to a place like Kansas City, have 5 or 6 good experiences in a row. And yeah, it's, and by the way, they love sports there. And I think that that's part of it too. If you're there for a sporting event, these are your people.
It is really, it's a lot of fun to come to a Chiefs game. The crowds, I'll be interested to see. I'll tell you the crowds when they were good, incredible here. Love their Royals. It's been, you know, it's a tough market, tough as Padres fans for many years understood. Your good players come, they come, and the good players go, and you struggle through all these losing seasons. But they are good fans here, good people here. Love the Midwest.
Awesome. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres Royals 3-game series starting here on Friday. Kevin, next time we will talk Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
A gigantic hawk just flew right up to my window. Here he comes again. This is insane. Wow, it's beautiful. Just right outside, 19th floor, right outside my window, just perched right there.
He heard us saying nice things about his city, I think.
That makes for really good podcast when a guy's describing what's happening outside his window. Well, here we are at the 36-minute mark, which I think is a new record for you and I.
Theater of the mind, absolutely. All right, we'll see you next time.